The next case to be heard is number 2015-1332, Axcel Incorporated versus the Tax Commissioner.
Good morning, Master Commissioner, Mayor. May it please the court.
Mr. Fauci.
The BTA should be reversed for committing three fundamental errors in this case. The first, the BTA did not acknowledge that Axcel is engaged in the business of packaging and that the assessment here was for packages. It should have stopped there, full stop. The statutes don't allow packaging to be considered assembling or manufacturing. Second, with regard to purchases of leased labor by Axcel, the BTA fundamentally misunderstood the permanence of these employees and improperly granted exclusion for permanent employees, and also overlooked the weight of the evidence on the direction and control of these employees. Finally, as sort of a housekeeping matter for the BTA receives evidence and has broad authority to do so, but swung the pendulum way far in admitting the testimony of an expert witness in this case. We'd ask that the board pull the reins back on that as well.
Let me ask you a question about that. There's two experts here, one on each side. Each side contends that the other's expert is either not helpful, not qualified, or otherwise ought not to be paid any attention to. Now, your reading of the BTA decision, did they attach any importance to either of these experts?
The BTA's holding that Axcel was somehow doing more than packaging in production of gift baskets is premised on the only opinion in this case that there was more than mere packaging being done. The only opinion given that there was a change in state or form, the only person who could have given an opinion on that basis was Axcel's expert witness. So whether they expressly acknowledged it or not, they certainly adopted her opinion in their decision. And for the tax commissioner to have to contend with a witness that was who lied on their resume is just improper as a matter of housekeeping. So, you know, their witness lied about her degree. She gave herself a degree she didn't have. She gave herself a professorship that she didn't have.
I guess I was aiming as to whether or not these objections to these reports are consequential. And your view is that it is because you view the BTA as having relied upon the taxpayer's expert.
Right. And beyond sort of the weight that the BTA would attach to it, and that's the BTA's usual line is, we understand your objection and they'll go to weight. That we'll give to this expert testimony. That's fine and good. And as a matter of credibility, sure, you can say, there's no reference to her testimony in the opinion. But the fact is, as someone who is regularly in the BTA and who regularly has to deal with the question of expert witnesses, there has to be a line somewhere, okay? And you know, whether it's, you know, for the sake of judicial economy, whether it's for saving the state of Ohio and the taxpayers' money and time in defending people who should never have been in front of the tribunal in the first place, however this court wants to slice it. And understand, normally I wouldn't bring this to the court. I mean, the BTA has a pretty wide latitude in allowing witnesses and taking evidence, and we think that's appropriate and that's necessary. Again, here, this was shocking. Okay, this one went too far. And, you know, Axcel's complaints to our expert witness, at the hearing, they said right up front, this guy's qualified. It wasn't a question of qualification. There was no question of credibility. Their sole complaint on him was, well, he didn't expressly look at the definition of packaging in the Ohio Revised Code. Well, that's not the job of an expert. That argument is a nullity. That, in fact, if I had asked him to testify, what is the meaning in the Revised Code of the term packaging, that would be improper testimony from an expert witness.
Can I direct your attention then to one of the points on your appeal?
Sure.
The issue of whether or not the gift sets and so forth constitute assembly under the statute. Could you go ahead and present your argument on that?
Thank you for getting me on that. So Excel, okay, so before we talk about whether this is assembly, let's talk about the definition of assembly, 573901R, which says, you know, assembly is these things, but does not include packaging. So you meet all the criteria for assembling, but if you're packaging, if you're engaged in packaging, you're not assembling, period, full stop. So the board went too far when it read beyond, or when it read that requirement out of the statute. And what we have here is a state of affairs where Excel receives the gift baskets complete. Okay? They get the shampoo, the loofah, the scrub brush, whatever's going in there. They even get the basket. Okay? What they do then is they gather those materials together, maybe make it look nice so it sits on the shelf pretty, put some ribbon on it, put some shrink wrap on it. That's packaging. You know, contrast that to assembling, let's say, for example, a motorcycle assembly plant, where they're getting tires from this supplier, they're getting a carburetor from that supplier, they're getting a fork from this supplier, and at that plant, they put the motorcycle together. At the end of the process, you get a motorcycle.
But isn't the contention here that these gift sets, at least aesthetically, if not functionally, are sort of a separate product in their own market?
Well,
the evidence show that, or does it not show that?
The analogy, though, would be to the motorcycle assembly plant sending out a box of nicely packaged motorcycle parts. You wouldn't say they're assembling there. The same's true here. And whether or not the gift basket is a distinct and identifiable product, it is. But it comes to them complete. Everything in that has already been manufactured. And this court has been clear that the mere gathering together of pre-manufactured goods is not packaging. They get a complete gift set, and they never take title to any of the items in this gift set. They are outsourced packaging for the manufacturer. So manufacturer holds title to these all the way along the chain, sends them the complete gift set, and says to Excel, let's come up with a nice shelf display for this product. And of course, you know, I have a gift basket, it has multiple products, and it has to be visible on the shelf. I have to be able to look in there and see what's in the gift basket. I may put some cardboard in there to stack the products neatly. I want it to look nice, so we're going to put a nice ribbon on it, maybe some colorful fill. Those things are all packaging. And if you look at 573902B15, which is the exemption for packaging for manufacturers, it defines packaging as two things, a noun and a verb form. Packaging to place in a package, the verb form. And packaging itself, it defines as things like wrap, tape, shred, fill, glue, corrugate. Those are all the things that Excel was assessed for. If you look down the list of products that they were assessed for, they are all in that category. Okay, so what we have here is Excel gets a completed product from the manufacturer, uses those items listed in B15 and described as packaging to place them in a shelf-ready display.
But isn't it just as accurate on the evidence to say that they get something that could be viewed as components of what they finally produce, the soap or the whatever other manufactured items are part of this gift basket, and then they perform their own kind of assembly to create a new product?
No, and that wasn't even the testimony of Excel's witnesses. I mean, we have newspaper articles and so forth in the record that were confirmed by live witness testimony that Excel's process occurs at the end of manufacturing. That's packaging. That's a hallmark of packaging, as this court said in Fichtel and Sachs and other cases. So, again, you know, Schatz Holmes made it clear that the mere gathering together of prefabricated materials is not manufacturing. Okay, and Fichtel and Sachs makes it clear that when this happens at the end of manufacturing, it's packaging. Now, you know, I suppose what you could say is that they have enhanced the value of this gift set by putting it in a nice package, right? That's maybe the most generous view of this. But even that's foreclosed under sod or woodworking. This court has said a mere enhancement of value to completed goods is not a change in state and form that would qualify you for manufacturing. So, you know, beyond that, and we're in the legal definition of packaging here, you know, this court has said that packaging is designed to restrain the movement of a product in more than one plane of direction. That's what this does. That's the custom beverage case. And in Newfield Publishing, this court said packaging gets a product ready for shipping and handling. Again, there's direct testimony on these points from Excel's own witnesses. Yes, the packaging restrains the product in more than one plane of direction. They said our goal is to have it look like on the shelf, like how it looked like it came off our line. And some of this stuff is packers. Some of this stuff is not even the gift set. It's I'm putting it in a box to send it off, you know, it's a shipping container. So again, and they don't make any part of this. They don't manufacture the basket, they don't manufacture the lotions, they don't manufacture the candles. You know, they receive a completed gift set from the manufacturer, and like the clutch assembly kits in Fichtel and Sachs, they place those together in a package, and it's sent out the door. So, and again, the BTA mischaracterized Fichtel and Sachs as a pick-and-pack case. That's not correct. If you look at the way the court described the product in Fichtel and Sachs, and if you have any familiarity with a clutch kit, you know, you're getting a complete kit to change the clutch assembly on a manual transmission vehicle. You're getting a pressure plate, you're getting a clutch disc, you're getting tools to put it in, you're getting grease for the bearings, and it all comes in a box with a label that's identified as your part, okay? No different than what we have here. They have pre-manufactured goods that they're putting together, wrapping in cellophane, putting some shred in there, a nice bow. This is packaging 101. And Excel has admitted time and time and time again that they're a packaging company. It's only for purposes of this appeal that they're an assembly company. They've said in every public-facing document. It's on their website. Their founders say it in interviews. It's on their tax returns. It's on their internal financial statements. This is a packaging company engaged in the business of packaging. And my expert witness, and granted, you know, they took issue with the idea that he didn't read the definition of packaging, which incidentally he did. You know, he's a professor at the School of Packaging in Michigan, okay? If there's a person who knows packaging, I found him, okay? And he said this is a business. This is a contract packaging business. Manufacturers go to these businesses to outsource their packaging function. And the fact that they use assembly lines, the fact that they use build sheets, none of that changes the fact that they're engaged in the business of packaging. Let me move off that and talk a little bit about leased labor. So the Board of Tax Appeals here really lost its way. And the only evidence that the Board of Tax Appeals considered was testimony from the president of the company that supplied the leased labor, so Resource Staffing. This president of this company admitted on the stand that he had skin in the game. He admitted that I have to indemnify Excel if they're found liable for tax on these purchases. He also admitted the Department of Tax is auditing my company for this exact relationship with other companies. So here's a guy who comes in.
Well, it's not really the function of this court to determine the credibility of this witness,
sure.
Though, is it?
Sure. Well, and this court can look at that and determine that it was improper for them to rely solely on this testimony in the face of the mountain of testimony and evidence presented by the tax commissioner, including the fact that, you know, HR Options, Bay Mechanical both say a hallmark of temporary labor is that it's seasonal. You know, that there's only really two things that HR Options says. They say substitute or seasonal. I mean, this is a hallmark of seasonal. And everybody along the chain, every witness testified that these are seasonal employees. In fact, their labor charts showed that during the busy season, this is a service to the retail industry, during the build-up to the Christmas shopping season, they spend six times on labor what they spend through the rest of the year. We also showed that in a four-month period, 50% of their employees will turn over. The other big problem here is their contract doesn't meet the express requirements of 5739-01JJ. It does not contain any term of employment. And so for the BTA to go beyond the contract and look at the facts and the circumstances of employment was clear error under HR Options and Bay Mechanical.
But isn't that exactly what the court did in HR Options?
In HR Options, the terms of employment were found in the individual employee contracts, which we don't have here. And many of them had a starting date but no ending date. And the court said that could be indefinite. That to us supplies a suggestion of a term of permanence. So now we go to the facts.
But it didn't matter that there was no permanence language in the employment services contract, right?
Right. That's a one-way ratchet, though. And the fact is, you know, if you fail to specify any term of employment, even suggesting permanence, the contract or the statute says the contract must specify permanent employment. And this court is well familiar with cases like Queen City Valves that discuss what specify means. So where you're completely lacking a term, you don't even get around first base. I see that my time's running out, so
your time's expired.
Reserve whatever.
Thank you, Mr. Fauzi. Right. Mr. Poe.
Good morning, Master Commissioner Mayor. Scott Poe. I'm here on behalf of the taxpayer Excel Incorporated. We ask the court to largely affirm the Board of Tax Appeals decision, except as raised in our cross appeal. I do want to address something Mr. Fauzi brought up, which relates to the expert opinion. The Board of Tax Appeals decision did not at all reference the expert opinions in this case. In fact, it found, based upon very specific factual findings, that led to the legal conclusions in this case. So I don't believe the expert opinions, while we believe their expert was admitted improperly, I don't think that makes much of a difference, and it would be harmless error to the extent they were admitted. I also want to address the packaging versus manufacturing argument. Excel gave a very specific example during the Board of Tax Appeals on what we believe packaging means, and what this court has said packaging means, which is to put items into a box and contain them for shipping and handling. In Cole National Corporation, this court very specifically said not everything that restrains movement in more than one direction is a package. In fact, if it serves a marketing function, it is not a package. Which means, based upon the definition of packaging, to put something into something that serves a marketing function may not be, quote, packaging. In fact, in Schultz Homes, what the taxpayer there did was gathered together pre-assembled manufactured home pieces. It did not do anything to put them together. It just put them in a staging area for purposes of later delivery. That is not at all what Excel does. The example that Excel gave at the Board of Tax Appeals hearing was to take, in fact, Excel bought some products online. Those items were just miscellaneously put into a box, wrapped together with some protective foam, and then shipped out. Excel opened it up, looked, there's my body wash, there's my lotion, etc. The Excel gift set is something much, much different than that. That's something that's designed over 6 months, planned over 6 months, where Excel goes back and forth with its customer over 6 months to develop very detailed ways that these things are put together and assembled. They are not haphazardly thrown together. Once this six-month process runs its course, then Excel gets together, they have an assembly line, they give their employees a very specific delineation of how these things are put together, and the employees follow that. And this is all designed to make sure that that end product is something different than the component parts. It's done to make sure that that somebody, when they get a gift set that Excel made, isn't getting miscellaneous bottles of hygiene product that they ordered off the internet. It's doing it so that they can give something that resembles a gift. And by that I mean the very nature of what these components are has been changed by what Excel does. There's testimony in the record, and the Board of Tax Appeals found what the customer is buying is the things that Excel put in the product. They're buying it for what Excel does. If they wanted to go buy miscellaneous bottles of hygiene products, they would have done that. They choose to buy the gift set because that's what they want to purchase.
So you're saying the purchaser of the gift set is a person giving a gift?
I don't necessarily believe the intention is relevant.
Okay.
I think what the fact of the matter is that they've created something that's different than what it is, the very nature of the individual thing. Now, in the usual case, you're correct. They are buying it to give it as a gift, but there's also testimony that some people may buy them for themselves. I know my mom in her bathroom keeps one of them sitting on the toilet. I mean, that just because it looks nice. But she doesn't just put together miscellaneous bottles of shampoo in a cardboard box. It's something very different. I also want to point out in solder woodworking, which is another example of packaging, the taxpayer there put miscellaneous cardboard and foam around manufactured furniture to protect it during shipment. That was found to be packaging. By contrast, there's a case called Ball Container Corp., which on remand from this court found that when a taxpayer took pre-partitioned cardboard containers and put plastic bottles into them, sold the whole thing to a customer, that was a manufacturing function because the product that the taxpayer in that case was making was the bottle inside the pre-partitioned cardboard container. Something different. That's what their customer wanted. Just like in Excel's case, what Excel's customer wants is to buy the gift set that Excel is making and all the components that it adds to it. It's paying for that product. I'd also point out that there is a case in the United States, the only other case in the United States, that's looked at whether or not a gift set maker is manufacturing or assembling, and it found that it was manufacturing. Although that case relied on federal tax law, it looked at the very same definition of manufacturing in this case, whether the taxpayer changed the state or form of the individual components of the gift set to make something completely different. And that court found that it did. It found that it took individual groceries, effectively, and changed them into something that serves a much different form and purpose, a gift that's given during the holiday season. I'd also like to touch upon the leased labor component of the case.
Yeah, could you address the seasonal or not seasonal nature?
Sure. Now, I will admit the hours did fluctuate. The employees fluctuated, but the employees were not reassigned elsewhere. They were devoted by resource staffing to Excel permanently. Resource staffing testified that they could not reassign those people without breaching their contract with Excel. Those people, to the extent that hours were reduced or production went down, the employees' hours were reduced across the board. In fact, the Board of Tax Appeals made a very specific factual finding based upon that. So the employees, they were devoted exclusively to Excel. They weren't going anywhere else. And in fact, there's a lot of factual reasons to support that. Excel needed people to make sure that they stayed there so they didn't have to retrain people and go through the cost and expense of slowing down production to bring in new people day in, day out. From resource staffing's perspective, having the same people come in there day after day was a huge benefit to it because...
So the way it worked was, yes, there would be a big push in the later months of the year toward the holiday season, but those would be the same people who are employed year-round, but they would get more hours.
They would get more hours. That's correct. In fact, what the testimony of the Board of Tax Appeals was that over 50% of the relatively 650 people that were assigned by resource over the course of their relationship were there for at least a year. Some people stayed 5 and 6 years. So, I mean, to the extent there was some fluctuation, I mean, this wasn't, you know, a job where everyone would dream to have it. This involved a lot of standing, long times of standing, monotonous, very repetitive behavior for low wages at a distant location. So people quit. That happens. Mm. But that doesn't mean that they weren't permanently assigned. Like I said, the labor itself fluctuated based upon the needs, but those people were still there in the pool devoted exclusively to Excel. Resource staffing was not sending them elsewhere.
Yeah, and there were a couple of exhibits X and Y.
Sure.
The Y one was an exhibit that purported to show how long employees had remained.
Correct.
Placed sort of at Excel. Now, why wasn't that presented? That was presented belatedly, correct? Out of rule.
Sure. What happened was the tax commissioner subpoenaed some records from the resource staffing. For whatever reason, resource staffing apparently did not receive that subpoena until, I'll call it 10 days before or so before the hearing. It did produce the documents 4 days before the hearing and then brought the documents with them to the hearing. Admittedly, Excel received those at the exact same time. What Exhibit Y was a compiled spreadsheet based upon invoices between Excel and resource staffing that showed the tenure and duration of all the employees. So Excel got that.
But was that Exhibit Y, was that prepared for the litigation? And that's why I'm puzzled why it wasn't presented.
Sure. It was. My understanding is it was prepared by resource staffing as a summary of the invoices that were subpoenaed by the tax commissioner. So I assume it's fair to say it was prepared for the sake of the litigation. Admittedly, Excel didn't know about it until it received it at the same time as the tax commissioner.
Okay.
But the invoices themselves, I want to add, were part of the record. They were stipulated to by the tax commissioner for being admitted.
Okay.
I could go on about the expert. I don't believe that she lied in her testimony. I believe, she did say exactly what her degree was in. She did say exactly who co-authors of her book were. That's just simply not the case what's before this court. But I don't have anything else to add.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Poe. Mr. Fauci, please take a minute.
Thank you. 2 points. I want to return to the temporary labor because we didn't talk about the supervision or control part of the board's decision. If you'll look at the contract between Resource Staffing and Excel in this case, paragraph 1 says Excel will have the right to direct and control these employees. In fact, it doesn't say the right. It says Excel will direct and control these employees.
Actually, let me back up.
Sure.
Did the BTA make a finding about direction or control, or did it just about the argument?
They did. In my estimation, it was not. It was dicta because they had already held that they were permanently placed. It was sort of an also. There appears to be direction and control, but they did opine on it, and so I wanted to make clear to this board that. You know, the only testimony on the point was that Resource Staffing would send supervisors to supervise the quality of the work. As opposed to that, there's a lot of testimony that said Excel, you know, sets their hours, makes the demands, puts the production sheets in place that they're to follow, is responsible for safety, is responsible for OSHA, and by contract directs and controls those employees.
Okay.
If I can, on Exhibit Y, Exhibit Y and Exhibit X were both, yes, responsive to my subpoena, okay? Excel made no effort to get these documents on their own or get them in the transcript.
Yeah.
So for them to claim fault with me not introducing documents that I subpoenaed is okay.
I understand. Thank you. Your time has expired. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision. At this point, we'll take a 10-minute recess.